Good afternoon, Eastern Washington and fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea. Welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the Capitol. Well, there's a debate over that a little bit, but I think there's at least a reasonable opportunity that Spokane Valley should be the capital of Liberty State and already is a free Washington. Send me a message on Facebook. Let me know what you think about where the state capital should be for Liberty State. But getting back to the official introduction, this is brought to you once again, Patriot Radio is, by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story in the news behind the news. Not about right or left, it's about right and wrong. Better hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer, but moving also to action, and about Luke 17, 20 through 21. Now, having been questioned by the Pharisees as to when the kingdom of God was coming, he answered them and said, "The kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed, nor will they say, 'Look, here it is,' or 'There it is.' For behold, the kingdom of God is inside you," or in your midst, which was the dominion Jesus Christ was talking about. Interesting developments here recently. The persecution of Christians in America is paralleling something that happened in the former Soviet Union. And this is very critical kind of to understand as far as history is concerned, that typically what will happen in a socialist regime is they will set up a state church or a non-confessing church. This is a church that they'll say they're Christian, okay, but really they're nothing more than an organ of the state or of the Socialist or Communist Party that is there. I think that's an important point to understand. In fact, Richard Wurmbrand in Romania, they had this council, and the communists tried to get all the pastors in the country in one place so that they could switch them all over to be organs of the Communist Party. And those that fought against them became the Confessing Church, and many were eventually jailed. But the Confessing Church of Romania, many of them were eventually jailed, tortured, some were killed. And the important point that I'm getting to is, though, that other churches, so-called Christians, would turn in people who were not part of the state church, the official state church. You're seeing this happen in China today, where there's an official Chinese state church, and then a lot of these underground churches or confessing churches of the modern era, these state churches, they find out about them, and they will turn these people in. Happened in the former Soviet Union, and particularly in Ukraine, 1963, if I recall correctly, there was a split between the confessing church and the state church. And I was recently talking to a member of the Slavic community about this, and that knows that history and was alive for some of it. And this is exactly what happens in a country where socialism, communism is trying to, again, maintain dominance or establish dominance. Is you see so-called Christians, so-called, you know, testified to Christians, will start persecuting other members of the real church of Christ, of the Christian church. And he said to me, it was very profound. He just said, yeah, that's where it starts. It starts inside the church. Persecution starts inside the church. And it's kind of counterintuitive, I think, to a lot of people. But for, you know, sympathizers and self-proclaimed informants and these types of folks, back in the former Soviet Union, in China, and now we're starting to see it happen here in America, have created more damage to the preaching of the gospel of Jesus Christ in one respect. Those people suffered persecution. They were tortured. But you know something? It actually made the church stronger when these people did this. It actually galvanized the body of Christ together in unity when this stuff started to happen. So in one sense, there is a negative. There was a cost. But in another sense, it actually made the church stronger and prepared the church to receive the move of the Lord that was already happening, that God wanted to see come to full measure. So we see this again historically, and we're seeing it again here begin in America. You see these words and phrases being used, and ultimately then it will turn into an attempt to stop, squelch, punish free speech, use somebody acting according to their conscience as a reason to jail them or subject them to lawfare. We're starting to see it, folks. And this election coming up here in 2020 is just going to be, it's just going to be one of those times. So if, as you're looking at this, and you can see it through a historic lens of what has happened to the body of Christ in the past, you can begin to you can discern who's who first, who is part of the state church, who's the sympathizers with the socialists and the communists, and who is actually part of the confessing church. And you can begin to be part of that unified effort that is such a great testimony of Jesus Christ and has been in the past and will be in the future. It just will. So understand that, and I hope that historical context clears up some things in your mind about where we're at today. And you understand, too, that this is not, it is no longer about ideology, really. It is about worldview. It is about worldview. Is Jesus Christ really our Savior? Did he really die? Did he really shed his blood to cover our sins? And is he the King of Kings and Lord of Lords who has dominion over the whole earth? Is he really the Lord of the owner of the cattle of a thousand hills, of all the cities on the earth, all the people in them, all of creation? Did he actually speak creation into being? These are questions that as true Christians you have to answer. Of course, yes, he is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He is the sovereign Lord. And sovereign has a very specific meaning that if he really did die for us in that way and he really is coming back and he really is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, then he is worth the persecution. He's worth the persecution from the people that are sympathizing with the communists and the socialists. He's worth the persecution from the people who call themselves Christian. He's worth the slams on the reputation. He's worth the threats to the life of you and your family, me and my family. He's worth it. Jesus Christ is worth it. But don't, and this is key, don't let yourself be rationalized into or talked into a compromised position where really the state tries to replace Jesus Christ. That's very dangerous. It is idolatry. All right, now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. And there's a couple things that are pretty interesting right now happening. Coming to us from Deb Kefile, Vice President Pence, America will always stand with Israel. Trump ready to meet Iran's president within weeks. Israel is now quietly warning Beirut A powerful response would greet an attack on Golan or Galilee. In other words, the northern part of Israel. This drone attack that actually happened in Israel was a targeted assassination attempt. I think this is important to understand that things are continuing to heat up. This also is important to understand too, that the drone attack strategy and tactic, both, because it is both, is now part of modern warfare. And the Israelis were charging that Soleimani, who is an Al-Quds chief, that's an Iranian military chief, was masterminding and training a drone team for a major attack on northern Israel. And now Israel struck back with this attempted assassination. So you have a couple of things I think are important to understand there. Number one, drones are now being used as a matter of course, not just against an area target like northern Israel, but also against individual people. Now we kind of have known this, obviously, and you know, knowing that the drone attacks were targeted at Al-Qaeda members and all of these things, but this is getting very clear where these targeted attacks now are going to be part of military warfare, both at the striking of an area, but and at leadership. Very important in the Middle East. All right, also on the national front, this is an interesting development coming to us from the New American Magazine. In another effort to counter China, and if you're not following this trade war that is happening, is really an economic war regarding who is going to be the dominant world power for the next century. I hope everybody understands that's what's at stake. And also, and again, this is objective analysis. Also, countering China has to be able to project power. And as I've been talking about, the Straits of Malacca are a strategic liability for the Chinese. And so they're trying to build this rail network over the Himalayan mountains through Pakistan down to a port there so they can bypass the Straits of Malacca. And it's both a rail and a road network. But the Chinese are also building a blue water navy to project power into the ocean. Right now, they don't have enough to project power. So the United States is coming to us again from the New American. U.S. warplanes may be flown off Chinese warships. I'm sorry, Japanese warships as a counter to China. So U.S. warplanes may be flown off Japanese warships as a counter to China. So that would expand the number of warships, specifically the F-35B as the airplane, could be flown off of Japan's largest warships, thus increasing the naval footprint of the United States of America. So in other words, you could have more planes now in an area of the world. And obviously, they're thinking that the South China Sea and off the coast of Japan is becoming such a place in the world. And because Japan has a technically pacifist constitution, they can't maintain attack aircraft carriers. Okay, so they have these warships, but these warships can be used for flying U.S. airplanes off of. So this is an interesting development strategically, and I wanted to walk through it kind of slowly because it's so important to understand this is another little ratchet up in that region of the world. Also, coming to us on the international front out of Venezuela, we've been talking about these death squads, and I think it's another important point to bring up. When these socialists begin really pushing gun control in earnest, and they are, they start buyback programs, they start enforcing these arbitrary red flag laws, and then the arms are confiscated. Now, in Venezuela, what they did with them is they gave them to these socialist paramilitary organizations, which now have turned those guns on the populace, and they've become death squads. This is, again, the reason why the right to bear arms was written into the Constitution and protected by the Constitution. I should say protected, not written into, but protected by the Constitution. Because the founding fathers understood very, very clearly, looking at history, that things can go very wrong and you can have a complete turnaround of a country into despotism in very short order if the right to bear arms is not maintained. All right, very important. Okay, also on the international front, and I think part of the just such a interesting area of the world, but in Kashmir, autonomy was removed by the Indian government. They moved in with troops. Some power has been restored there. But the fact of the matter is this is now becoming a flashpoint because it is right where the Chinese, or right near where the Chinese want to build this railroad network over the Himalayan mountains. Be interesting to see which side India kind of falls down on. They've always kind of tried to play the middle. I know that's an oversimplification for all you history buffs, but the fact of the matter is, are they going to be allied with the United States? Are they going to be neutral? Are they going to be allied with somebody else? We don't know yet. Also on the international front, this coming to us from the Global Muslim Brotherhood Daily Watch, a great intelligence digest. It covers the world wide Muslim Brotherhood network. If you don't subscribe to him, it might be a good idea. But the Deputy Secretary General of the European Council for Fatwa and Research has published a list of newer planned mobile phone applications to be launched by organizations part of or close to the Muslim Brotherhood. These apps were announced at a second meeting of the Scientific Committee of the Muslim Brotherhood. Look, here's the bottom line. The Muslim Brotherhood are now going to create these applications to bolster their network around the world so that they can not just communicate, but they can share information in real time. And there's still people in this country who don't understand the import of the Holy Land Foundation trial and all of the unindicted co-conspirators of the Holy Land Foundation trial, including the Council of American Islamic Relations and the North American Islamic Trust. They don't understand what the import of that is. But the Center for Security Policy does. And if you don't know the Center for Security Policy, check them out. They've got a great press release about the Truth Squad exposes discredited SPLC and CARE, Council of American Islamic Relations, or Honest American Islamic Relations, as fraud. And it's quite a list of names that were part of this. Cited in the article, among other things, was former Acting Assistant Secretary of Defense Frank Gaffney, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, discussing, among many others, these ideas of the SPLC and the Council on American Islamic Relations being, you know, legitimate organizations that, you know, really are just trying to do the right thing. In fact, they are agenda organizations, and as these guys say in the article, frauds. So take a look at that on the Center for Security Policy. I think it's pretty good. Also, on the national front, Facebook backs down, admits the John Birch Society post was not hate speech. So the New American Magazine coming out with this. In July, Facebook removed a post by the John Birch Society in regards to immigration, saying that it went against community standards. And also banned the JBS from monetizing its videos on Facebook for 30 days. And it carried the title, quote, immigrant invasion. And that's what really got Facebook in an uproar, where Facebook has finally backed down. Yeah, that's awesome. The fact that they did it in the first place is the problem. And the real question is Facebook really becoming an arm of government and not just a private entity? A lot of people talking about that. And I think it's a legitimate question that we should all be contemplating. In addition, so this is a small win. It really is a small win. But in addition to that, very underreported, this again coming to us from the New American, a U.S. appellate court, okay? A U.S. appellate court said electors cannot be bound by law. Okay, what does that mean? Okay, right in America, we have the so-called Electoral College, okay, where electors are the ones that actually vote for president. And electors are determined based on vote. Well, it has been that if an elector, it's called a faithless elector, and actually Senator Mike Padden, was called a so-called faithless elector. Actually, he believes, and I believe too, that he made the exact right decision. He cast his vote for Ronald Reagan, but this wasn't in 1980. This was in 1976. This is back, okay? And everybody else was casting it for Gerald Ford. And these laws have said that if you do that, if you don't, that you're bound to vote for the nominee, okay, who won. And if you don't, you could face fines. And the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled on Tuesday that members of the Electoral College cannot be bound by a state law to vote a certain way once they have been elected to serve as an elector. So once you get elected, and this was actually a check and balance in the system, once you get elected as an elector, you can make the decision. Now, what this has done, I believe, is completely undermined this national popular vote movement. I've been fighting this thing for years, quite literally since I first got in the legislature when they were bringing this up. Washington passed it. But what this is saying now, this court decision, is the national popular vote, or forcing all of the electors in a state to vote for the national popular vote winner, even if that person didn't win in that state, is effectively unconstitutional. And now those electors cannot be bound, and therefore eviscerating the national popular vote movement. This is a very, very important ruling by the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. So I put that up on the Facebook page, and you can go check it out if you want to. Every once in a while we get a good win, and that's one of them. Also want to talk briefly about this article also on the national front regarding Christian persecution. Judgment day for professor wants to kill all Christians, quote unquote. Hopes to, quote, bury them deep in the ground, quote. Apparently officials at an Iowa community college aren't comfortable with the professor threatening to clock the president with a baseball bat and, quote, bury evangelical Christians deep in the ground, end quote. Wait a minute, I thought it was the right that was promoting violence. Huh, that's interesting. What else is interesting is, you know, this comes, what, a week after Ilhan Omar praised, or 2 weeks after Ilhan Omar praised the guy that pummeled Rand Paul to the point that he had part of his lung removed, even recently, still in recovery from that. That's interesting. What we're seeing right now is projection. They are trying to project onto us how they are themselves. When they try to accuse a group of young men who are training in firearm safety of something nefarious, they actually are trying to project that onto us. And as I detailed in the last show, the World Underground Movement Plan, which was introduced in the Holy Land Foundation trial, this had the fourth phase of the World Underground Movement Plan specifically said that at that stage, there would be open political confrontation with the government using the, quote, political pressure approach, end quote. Can anybody say the squad? Okay. Then, below that, at the same time, according to the World Underground Movement Plan document, quote, they would be training in weapons for 0 hour, end quote. And that's actually the term they use. And for military veterans, 0 hour means the kickoff of some kind of a battle. So this is in the World Underground Movement Plan. You can look it up. It's on Understanding the Threat. You can read it for yourself. So we have these things that are there written years in advance, and it would appear very clearly that a plan is being followed by the jihadists and the Marxists in America. Very interesting. Again, all factual, all part of the Holy Land Foundation trial. You can read it yourself. But the fact that this continued violent rhetoric is coming out of the left, and yet you don't see Antifa being investigated. You don't see the John Brown Gun Club being investigated. You don't see the Redneck Revolt being investigated. And you don't see the Socialist Rifle Association being investigated, even though they're tied to this stuff. And one of them has made some pretty egregious threats toward people. So it's a very fascinating, complete bizarro world because the people that are actually doing the threats, perpetrating the violence, destroying property, are turning around and trying to blame constitutional Christian patriots for that. And then they're like, why are you guys doing firearms training? You know what I mean? It's absurd. It's absurd. The right to bear arms exists to prevent tyranny, period. In fact, that was in the Heller decision. Unreal. All right, but take a look at it for yourself. Learn, educate yourself on it, and shoot me a message if you can't find a link, but try to look it up yourself first. If you can't find a link, shoot me a message. I'll show you some of the news articles that have come out on this stuff. And the Center for Security Policy and Unconstrained Analytics, both those sites are very, very good at detailing these things. So check it out. All right, on the regional front, Liberty State. So effectively, the Marxists are trying to prevent Liberty State from having a booth at the Spokane County Fair. So they're trying to what? Squelch free speech. That's interesting. We just talked about that at the beginning of the show. Despite the massive, overwhelming support from folks all over, not just in Eastern Washington, but also in Western Washington as well. Because people are sick and tired of the fact they're being taxed into oblivion, that people are trying to come after their guns, people are trying to kill babies in the womb, they're trying to take away free speech and religious liberty. People are tired of it. They're just tired of it. And they're tired of all the agitators and everybody else that is, you know, working with the Marxists. All right. Lastly, on the local front, just a thank you to all the folks that showed up at my fundraiser. It was amazing. It was the largest fundraiser I've ever had. Most people, I just want to say thank you. It was great to see so many proud Americans of all walks of life and ethnicities in one place where the Constitution is uniting us all. And, you know, we had some great prayers. We had a lot of pastors and ministry leaders there. It was just so great to see the Christian community come there as well and come together in unity under Christ. All right, that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us. And also, if you get a chance, go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. Remember, we are on iTunes and Podbean. And if you get a chance, you can always go to VoceAsaga.com and help keep us on the air. Really appreciate everybody that has been doing so far. All right, it's my pleasure to introduce Glenn Tate, author of the 299 Days book series. He is also the host of Prepper 2.0, which is not just a podcast. I think it's also a radio show. Glenn, it's great to have you back on the show again.
Oh, it's so good to be back. Love it. We've had some really, really great conversations over the years, and it has been a course of years, and it's kind of a highlight. I get to talk to you and all your listeners. It's really, really neat. So thank you very much for having me on.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Facebook, since I was talking about it earlier in the show.
Yeah.
You kind of had a run-in with Facebook.
Yeah, and I have an update, and it tracks really, really well with the John Birch Society thing you mentioned few minutes ago, that Facebook backed down on that, and I have some news for you on my case. So here's what happened. I'm an attorney like you are, and not all attorneys are horrible people. I think you and me are pretty decent guys, so you know we got that going. We do similar kinds of law. You represent good guys, and you represent, you take on important cases that are often hard to win, and I'd like to think that I do the same. I don't do the easy stuff, and neither do you, right? So a Patriot client of mine, and I'm not going to say who it is because there's a variety of reasons to not do that. We don't want the SPLC, bothering the guy. So a Patriot client of mine came to me and said all of his posts, he has a variety of businesses. He has a variety of business-related Facebook pages. And all of a sudden, one day, without any explanation, without any warning, he could not put ads on his pages. Well, this is a problem because he spent an enormous sum of money, a six-figure sum of money, boosting these pages, paying to get this really big audience that he had for his various businesses. And then it's kind of useless if you can't keep boosting those pages because they slowly dwindle away, people don't hear from you, and all that other stuff. So there was an actual monetary damage issue in all of this. This wasn't just, I'm really mad at Facebook, I'm going to go sue them kind of thing. I find that Christians like us usually don't do that sort of stuff because we're just not wired that way. So there was a lot of damages involved. And he got a hold of me, and I said, I might just be coming up missing pretty soon, right? I'm about to sue Facebook. I'm sure I will, have committed suicide with like three gunshots to the back of my head or something crazy like some of the other so-called suicides may have gone on. But and I'm kidding with that, of course. But anyway, it was scary. I got to tell you that. It was scary suing Facebook. They're a multi-billion dollar company, and I'm just little old me. So we filed a lawsuit under the Consumer Protection Act of Washington State. And the theory was, and I think it's pretty sound, the theory is, so Facebook, you take in all this money from people for ads, and you tell them that you have community standards, but you never really say what they are. They're not defined anywhere, and they're completely subjective. They're the vaguest things in the world, sort of like so-called standards like, don't make anybody mad or be tolerant or, that interpretation. If you're going to have vague standards like that, you need to disclose to people that we'll take your money, and we may shut you down for no reason, and you have no recourse whatsoever. And so I filed the case, had to hire a process server to serve the lawsuit on Facebook in Delaware, since they're a Delaware corporation. So this is not an easy task. And that's part of my point with all this. It's not an easy task. You have to have a client who can afford to do this, and a lawyer like me, or probably you probably would have taken the case too, that's crazy enough to do this kind of stuff. So it's not easy to just go and sue Facebook and serve them in Delaware, right? This is not in the realm of most people's resources and capabilities. So that happened. Well, here's the good news, and we found out about it yesterday, as a matter of fact. We now have the ad account back up and running. It happened. Facebook is such a giant, powerful, rich nation. That's how this works. Their so-called tech support, they don't have tech support. There's none. I was So their lawyer, they have this gigantic law firm in San Francisco with these lawyers that are, you know, $500-$700 an hour. No kidding. I mean, you know what big city lawyers cost, and that's not an exaggeration. So let's just go with the low figure. I have a $500 lawyer call me and say, hey, what's going on with this? And I said, would you just turn the ads back on? That would be really great. And so they hired their lawyer at $500 an hour to review the case and do all of that, and then call Facebook and tell them to turn this very specific ad account number so we could tell them exactly what they need to do, turn it back on. That's tech support. That's customer support at Facebook. You have to sue them, and they have to hire $500 an hour lawyers to then tell Facebook to go fix something they broke. And none of this happens unless you can hire a lawyer and go and sue them. So as of yesterday, the ad account is magically back on, and I'm not dropping the lawsuit until I know that this is a permanent thing, because the whole point of this is they can just arbitrarily turn it off. It's funny. They said that this this business was selling firearms, and right at the time of that claim, this business's various Facebook pages had been hacked. So, and they were hacked, and of course it was a political opponent who did it, like some lefties, I don't know who it was. And the hacking was a bunch of like posts by scary paramilitary people, you know, in black hood or whatever. I don't know what they have described. It was probably a bunch of Antifa people playing dress up, but it really was, you know. And costume party because they live in their mom's basement or whatever they do in Antifa. And so right at the time of the hacking, they said we were trying to, or the client was trying to sell guns. They said, well, we were hacked. We would have liked to have been able to tell you that in this so-called appeal process, but you wouldn't let us. So now the ad account's back on for a day. We'll see what happens. But my point with this, and you can tell what my point is, this isn't really a solution. I mean, if you have to sue Facebook, that's really not a solution to any of this. And I do know what's going on with Facebook. They're so big. They're so arrogant. They don't care. And all they respond to are things like lawsuits. So that's the Facebook story. And I think it's so sad. I remember even a couple years ago, Facebook wasn't this bad. They weren't like this. Well, that's what happened with the client. Here's something that maybe impacts people more directly because my client isn't listening. So here's something that may impact you. Maybe some of you out there listening are fans of the Prepping 2.0 podcast and radio show. We're on 5 radio stations in the West. And our Facebook page, all the stuff about the client was background. Our Facebook page, right about the time that I sued Facebook, all of a sudden our Facebook page was just taken down. No explanation. So now this is a second page. If you're following, if you're keeping score at home, as they say in the baseball games, right? If you're keeping score at home, this is now a second Facebook page. Mine, I believe, in retaliation for having the gall to sue them. Then they took it down. We had 15,000 followers on the Prepping 2.0 page that we built up over a nine-month period. That's kind of hard to do, by the way. It took a lot of work. So we build this page up. Poof, there it goes. It goes away. And I'm absolutely certain it's in retaliation. We don't post crazy things. I mean, we're just about prepping and stuff. There's no, I don't know. To me, it's not crazy. And so we're having a bit of fun with this. We are sending folks over to MeWe, which is M-E-W-E, which is like Facebook, but there are no censors. And I know that you have pretty big MeWe presence, and it works well. It's kind of nice, and it doesn't have as many bells and whistles as Facebook, but actually, who really needs all those bells and whistles? And it's apparently, you know, censor-free, which is nice. And so we're building the MeWe page up. We post on Facebook now. We created a second page. It's kind of like, you know, in these wars and everything, the one country will blow up a bridge, and overnight the other country will build it back up, and they just destroy it the next day. Well, that's kind of what we're doing. So we set up a second Facebook page. This one is now slightly different. This is Prepping 2.0 radio show and podcast. In 3 days, we have 3,000 followers, which is kind of nice. I think people are taking out their ire on Facebook by liking the page, which is great. And in almost every post now that we put on Facebook, because we still need to use Facebook to reach listeners of the podcast and readers of the books and all those other things. There's a business reason to do it. We put a little PS line in there and say something like, Facebook's pretty awful. Why don't you join us on MeWe? And we put a link in for people to join us. So we're using Facebook's reach to tell people to get off of Facebook. So I feel pretty good about that. So that is the story about Prepping 2.0's Facebook page coming down. It looks like that week, last week, there were quite a few other conservative and gun-related, and I don't know, it's all anecdotal, so this isn't scientific. Other pages that were taken down to kind of a purge, I guess, of things that Mark Zuckerberg doesn't approve of is how I interpret it, or people who have had the gall to sue them or some combination thereof. So we were a victim of Mark Zuckerberg, and we're using it to our advantage. We're having fun with it. I know that when I was put in Facebook jail a couple months ago for posting something, I can't remember what it was. It was, I don't know, I think I mentioned, like, you can buy a gun at this particular place or something like that. I was in Facebook jail. You rallied some troops. It was free Glenn Tate, right? It was like, you know, like the lefties always do with their, you know, Abu Mubia. I don't even know what the guy's name was anyway, that they're always talking about freeing. Leonard Peltier, all those kind of things. It's like, free Glenn Tate. And so that was a lot of fun, and we had a really good time with that, and it got some laughs because we as conservatives and Christians, we actually have a sense of humor, and we find life enjoyable. We're not dour and crying and pouting all the time like the left. So anyway, it's been fun, but it's illustrative of how much power these folks have and how they wield it and what it takes to rein them back in, and so a good outcome. And that's great for John Birch Society having that similar outcome. That's good stuff. So everybody, my message to them is this: diversify. Don't put all your eggs in the Facebook basket or something if you're on social media. Go to MeWe. There are conservative alternatives emerging for a variety of things. There are some conservative alternatives. They haven't gotten big enough yet as a business matter to really be worth it, but there are some alternatives to YouTube. There's an alternative to Patreon, which is a way of shows like ours, Prepping 2.0. We have, you know, supporters, $2 a month or up to $20 a month, and it goes through Patreon and all that. Well, that might get compromised. So we already have a backup system set up and ready to go. Flip of a switch, I send out a couple thousand emails, and all my supporters go from Patreon to this new thing. So we have all these redundancies and backup plans. I just feel a little bit like, I don't know, I'm broadcasting in Morse code from a secret radio station in East Germany or something like that. I mean, it's just, it feels like there's like spycraft and fieldcraft just to get your message out about a podcast or a radio show or something like that. It just, it's creepy and weird, but it's kind of exhilarating, I have to tell you. I mean, we were born at a particular time. God put us on the earth at this time, in this place, with these gifts to do things. And I think, Matt, you and me and a lot of others, a lot of people listening, we're supposed to fight this fight. So I fight it with a smile on my face, and I'm appreciative of being used by God. So it's just a really kind of cool thing. So we made some lemonade out of lemons when we got kicked off of Facebook.
Well, I'm trying to build up my presence on MeWe. It is probably the most user-friendly that I've used a lot of the different alternative sites. But like you said, you know, a lot of them are not big enough to really kind of build that up. But I think people need to start doing this because ultimately one day, you know, they're telegraphing where they're going to go. The fact that they even banned you in the first place, the fact they even banned the society in the first place, the fact that they were already contemplating, like on YouTube, to, you know, cancel a Christian's YouTube channel. All of these things are signaling where they're going. They should have never had those thoughts in the first place. Eventually, that's going to happen. We need to be ready for it.
Exactly. And I came to a conclusion about this Facebook thing. I had a moment of clarity, and I wrote what I call the MeWe Manifesto. And I know manifestos have sort of a bad ring to them because they're usually, you know, serial killers, or not serial killers, but mass murderers. So it's not that kind of manifesto. But I don't know. MeWe begins with an M. Manifesto begins with an M. It was just kind of cute. My MeWe Manifesto goes something like this. hey, conservatives, Christians out there, you're probably on Facebook, and I understand that. I've been on Facebook. There are business reasons to be on Facebook. But here's the thing. In the coming days, months, years, whatever it is, we have to separate ourselves from the general population in some ways. Obviously, not saying go off and be a hermit or live in a, you know, a bunker or something crazy like that, and obviously engage as much as you can in that general population, the regular culture, because, you know, a lot of people need a lot of help, and we're there to guide them and lead them, and I accept all of that gladly. So I'm not saying completely, you know, check out of popular culture and the general population, but my point was, in the coming troubles, you're going to need to mentally and socially be able to separate yourself from the general population who are, among other things, unprepared for what's coming and these other things. You need to be able to say, I'm on, you know, the conservative team and you're not, and I'm not going to boo-hoo and cry about it. I, you know, maybe it's a split-second decision. You need to decide who's getting in the truck and getting out of Dodge while things are bad. I mean, these are real things in a collapse situation. So my point was, Facebook is great for the general population if you want to show pictures of your cat and doing funny things. And, you know, that's great. Facebook's for you. And if you want to rant about how awful Donald Trump is or be a social justice warrior, Facebook is for you. And that's cool. But we don't have to be part of that. Let's separate ourselves a little bit. And let's have our own conversations over on MeWe. And I know that's kind of throwing in the towel in a culture war in some ways. And I'm cognizant of that. And I'm not the throw in the towel kind of guy. You know, when you see Facebook, you're not a throw in the towel kind of guy. But I really think that we need to mentally practice this separation from the general population. And I think people going over to MeWe, looking at it, and starting to build up, you know, friends and associates and all that on MeWe is a great way to practice the separation. So I don't know if that sounds odd or not, but it's what the conclusion I came to, because I can't live in a world in which Facebook gets to do what they do all the time. I don't live in that world. I'm not okay with the Facebook world.
Nor am I. And I think a lot of people are getting sick and tired of it. They just don't know a viable alternative to go to. And again, this is one. I mean, there's several out there, but this is one. I want to kind of hone in on something that you said about troubles. You know, and it seems like every coffee shop you go to, or, you know, everybody's talking about this, right? You know, what does Trump win? What happens, you know, after Trump's second term, you know, all these kind of questions that are out there. And the fact of the matter is a lot of this is coming up because of the violence of the Marxists that we're seeing from Antifa, John Brown Gun Club, Socialist Rifle Association, Redneck Revolt. What we're seeing, and people are also seeing the media kind of covering for it too. And I think that's adding to the angst. What is your take on, you know, what's happening and what people are talking about?
Yeah, that is the topic. You're right. And it's not just, you know, us, those of us that are listening right now. It's not just us that are concerned about 2020. I think it's pretty broad. And as far as what I'm hearing, I jokingly say, and we've had this conversation off air, but it's true, I am the worst predictor of elections that you'll ever meet, right? So, and I always tend to think, because I used to live in Olympia and I had what you referred to correctly as Stockholm Syndrome, right? I was around all these liberals all day long, every day. Everybody was liberal. And I started to think that the world was truly liberal. I mean, when you go to a grocery store parking lot and there are 15, you know, Obama 2012 stickers on people's cars and there are zero stickers for anybody else, you start to believe the media when they say the polls indicate, you know, that Hillary Clinton's going to win in 2016. So I am... My track record's pretty awful, so please factor that in. I think that, you know, people, general population people, which I just sort of was pretty harsh on, now I'm going to go ahead and build up a bit. I think most Americans, especially in the normal parts of this country, which would exclude Western Washington, which would be Liberty and most of the Western states and Midwestern states and Southern states, have a good head on their shoulders, and they're so tired of the extreme left-wing stuff. I mean, you know, the debates, the presidential debates, and they would say, there's like, I don't know, 22 candidates, you know, at this first debate, including Jay Inslee. Boy, it's really sad to see him out of the presidential race. Who saw
that?
Yeah,
who could have seen that coming?
But they asked, they said, okay, who here supports free health care for illegal immigrants? All the hands went up, except for one, I think is a Colorado governor. He's out of the race, too. So let's just say every Democrat presidential candidate was all for it. I'll tell you, that video of all those hands coming up, that's going to be plastered on our TV screens in October and November of 2020. And I think people are going to say, I'm sorry, you know, maybe they don't like Donald Trump for whatever reason, or maybe the economy goes bad. I think the left can collapse the economy at the snap of a finger. And I think they do that right before the 2020 election. By collapse, I don't mean complete destitution and, you know, people eating out of garbage cans. I'm talking about a very serious recession, kind of a 2008 thing. Oh, when did that happen? I don't know, October of 2008, which is my exact point about the left being able to collapse or hurt economies and then leftists get elected, like Obama got elected then. So I think that people are generally sick of it. Then again, Trump won pretty narrowly. I mean, I've heard figures. I don't know, you probably are more up on this. You're in this business, but I've heard 170,000 votes if they would have gone the wrong way in various states with the Electoral College, then Trump would not have won. I don't know if that's true. I know that, you know, in the past years since the November 2016 election, there have been how many, you know, hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens who have come who are, of course, getting registered to vote. And, you know, we have Illinois and other places making it a lot easier for felons and those that are in jail. They're not yet felons yet because they haven't had their trial. Being able to vote. So my and the young people, the demographics on the Gen Z, you know, the 18 to whatever, 25 or something, that embrace socialism is horrifying. So there are a lot of things that have happened since November 2016 that make it harder for Trump to win. So that's just a little background. I don't know who's going to win. I think that the standard thing that I hear from everybody and I agree with is if Trump wins, the left will go insane. Oh, we might get a dress rehearsal of that if Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, passes and she has pancreatic cancer, and that's a particularly devastating form of cancer. It's a bad organ to have cancer in. So if she is up for replacement, you know, in the next few months, we're going to, you know, the Kavanaugh stuff was child's play compared to what they're going to do on Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But that's a whole probably topic for a different show. Talk for an hour about that. But everybody gets the point. So if Trump wins, it's going to be nastiness. Now, if Trump loses, I think it's going to be even more terrible and awful, not just because we have a Democrat in the White House. Well, because we would have a Democrat in the White House. Don't forget, every single one of those clowns up on that debate stage raised their hands for that, you know, illegal immigrant health care thing. My point with the Democrat winning isn't just bad public policy, because everybody knows that. You don't need a guest to come on your show to say, if the Democrats win, there's going to be some bad public policy, right? We all know that. But I think, depending on who wins, the Democrats are in it. They're in for revenge. They are out for revenge, I believe. That's a better way of saying it. They are hateful, frothing at the mouth. It depends. I mean, Joe Biden probably isn't as hateful as, I don't know, no, anyone
of the
others.
He's kind of more of a lover.
Yeah, he's more of he's a sleepy guy. He's a restful napper kind of guy who just, yeah. But I think, you know, Elizabeth Warren comes to mind and others. They so viscerally hate us. And I will never back down from that statement. I see it. I used to live in Olympia, for goodness sakes. If anybody knows how hateful the left is, it's somebody that was, like, stuck in it for a while, stuck in a liberal place. I think the revenge and the retaliation and the retribution will be ugly and obvious because they know nothing can hold them back. Because I think, I'm curious what you think, Donald Trump is probably the last Republican president, because even if he wins in 2020, by 2024, all these floods of illegal immigrants, all these young Generation Z, socialist-loving, you know, skulls full of mush, are going to, I mean, I just don't know how a Republican, you know, wins after this. And so they know, the Democrats would know if they won in 2020, that there's nothing stopping them. And even a Republican Senate, we can see how easy that can be breached, right? It's like, you know, oh, gun control is good for suburban women voters in Republican states, and you can't, you know, there's a race in the U.S. Senate, I think, to see who can pass gun control. I mean, you know, it's sad. But anyway, the Republican Senate, if it even held up, would not stop this stuff because of all the executive powers that the president now has. And I think that, you know, there'd be IRS audits of you and me. I mean, I think that's just a warm-up when I talk about retaliation. I think they're going to do squirrely bad things, I don't know what, on guns. I don't think there's ever going to be door-to-door confiscations because, as a practical matter, it won't work for a variety of obvious reasons. But they'll do all kinds of terrible things, and they're going to push and prod and poke at traditional Americans because they hate us. I wish I had a more complicated intellectual point to make than that. They hate us, and they want to push us, and it's going to be ugly, and then there will be one or more abominations that they do, and retaliations and retributions, and our side's going to say, heck no, no more, and then stuff's going to get super violent. So I didn't let you talk. I probably should have, but you asked that, and that's kind of how I see that playing out.
Well, we've got exactly 15 seconds, so if you could quickly plug Prepping 2.0 and where people can go find out more information about your books.
Prepping 2.0, website, prepping2-0.com. The books, 299 Days, and my wife's books, A Great State.
Awesome. Glenn Tate, author of 299 Days, host of Prepping 2.0. Thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today, and always appreciate your insight and also your courage for standing up to Farcebook and going to MeWe. That's awesome.
Thank you. It means a lot coming from you.
All right, man. Take care. And
adios,
for everybody
sir.
Out there, I just, you know, if you get a chance, go to MeWe, check it out. I'm on there as well. Just send me an invite. And we just really have to have these things in place ahead of time for what's coming the next, 2 years. May God bless all of you, and may He make this generation the greatest one.